Oi, eu sou Gustavo Menezes e eu sou um piloto de Star Mazda por Junkers Racing. Você está escutando OpenParock.net, o comentário de motorsport para os fãs, por os fãs.
And good evening, everybody, and welcome to the 78th episode of the Open Paddock Podcast, dubbed the Throwback Edition. Why, you ask? Well, two reasons. For one, it's just me and Mike tonight. Say hello, Mike.
Good evening, everyone.
And two, we are both moderately sloshed, which always makes for entertaining radio. So thanks for the download. It is Wednesday, our usual start time. If you were with us months ago, but here recently we've moved to Tuesday, but seeing as though the world is a mess and real jobs get in the way sometimes, we had to push back to Wednesday. So, how are you, Mike?
Doing good.
So what is your drink of choice?
This evening I cracked into a raspberry lambic.
I see.
Yes, a raspberry flavored beer. Very, very tart raspberry flavor to it. Yeah, my first attempt at a lambic, and didn't have a corkscrew to open the bottle. Didn't realize there was a cork in the bottle.
And that's why you're fired.
And that's why I had to break out the drill.
The drill. You literally drilled your beer open.
I had to. There's no other way to get in.
Well, note to self.
And you?
I had a, I may or may not have downed a pitcher of Bud Select, and then had a new concoction called Code Red, which is something specific to my bar that I usually frequent, but I tried it at home. It is a new Dude vodka, which is actually a Mountain Dew flavored vodka. Yes, instead of Dew, it's Dude. Whatever. No comment, because I know exactly where this is going. But nonetheless, I drank it and it was phenomenal because it was like some cherry stuff mixed in with some Red Bull, mixed in with some of this new Mountain Dew flavored vodka, which is actually very good. So I've had that. So just a little bit to make up for the weekend that I didn't get to have anything. So, and here we be. But, jam-packed show. We've got a lot of stuff for IndyCar, few things for Rally, one disturbing note from Le Mans, and some rather unbelievable news out of Formula One. So, but let's go ahead and kick it off with the IndyCar, and that is the Fast team, Alex Tagliani's IndyCar team, has been bought by Sam Schmidt, a guy who we knew had IndyCar implications and also had, you know, obviously very heavily involved with the Firestone Indy Lights championship as well. And he's now come on board and purchased the Fast team. Shed some details on that, Michael. What is that? What does that mean, and why did that happen? Because I thought, anyways, the, you know, uneducated troll I am, that the team was just fine, you know, talking about hope and tongue. So,
yeah, it's rather curious. I mean, first of all, Sam Schmidt is buying into the team, and he's buying in at a something of a reduced rate is the impression I'm getting. Sam has stumbled into a good deal. It looks like the team was hurting financially, and their main founder, Mr. I believe Andre Ozzie. No, I can't remember his first name. Anyway, Mr. Ozzie, to which Fast Racing owes its two Z's in its name. Mm-hmm. He was not interested in fronting the entire cost of the operation. Sam Schmidt has bought the operation. Alex Tagliani will remain as the team's driver in the number 77 Bowers and Wilkins car. Sam Schmidt gets in the deal. He gets, all of Fast's assets, including the Bowers and Wilkins sponsorship for the car this season. And that's actually a very good deal because you're getting a fully funded car. On top of that, we've got Sam Schmidt, who also has programs going on with other drivers. Specifically, Wade Cunningham is in for a handful of races. Jay Howard is in for one race. Those sorts of things going on. And Townsend Bell as well in for Indy. It sounds like all of those cars are going to be prepared and ran out of the team's, out of Sam Schmidt's shop, which is the Vision Racing shop, which Sam Schmidt basically took over from Vision. And it sounds like Fast is going to be slowly moved into that shop as well. So, you know, last year with great fanfare, the Fast Racing team came onto the scene, ended up 12th in the championship. That's really dang good for a first-year team, especially with the level of funding they had. Towards the end of the season, it sounded like they're going to fold up. And, you know, they're saying that they're definitely going to be in for this year, but it sounds like they were looking for some outside funding to actually make that happen. So, the good with the bad. The good is that Sam Schmidt's getting involved with IndyCar, not just Indy Lights. The good with Sam with this operation is Sam's taking over an effective and a good team that does get the team money. And on top of that, he's preparing the way for 2012, which was something that he's made comments about in the past. So all of that mixed in together, thrown in, and you got a extremely good veteran driver in Alex Tagliani.
Indeed. He proved that last year with some phenomenal performances.
Yeah, indeed.
Especially, I mean, he was really good on the twisties and had some really respectable, like you said, you know, for a first-time team, he had some real respectable performances on the ovals as well, which is something, you know, you get a lot of guys who are really good at the twisties, maybe not so much at the ovals, or, you know, vice versa. And and really, aside of the DeFerrin, or I'm sorry, not DeFerrin, I'm reading too far into the show notes, good Lord. Other than the Ganassi and Penske boys, I thought, you know, I was really surprised with the fast pace and Mr. Tagliani's capabilities on both ovals and road courses. And he left a lot to be, you know, he left us kind of in limbo for this year, you know, really wanting to see what the team can do now on its second try. So it's really kind of unfortunate that it's not, that it didn't carry on as it was, because I thought he was doing a phenomenal job as a driver owner, sort of deal, if you will. But this year should be good for him, because now maybe he can finally he can now focus on being a driver and not have to worry so much about the logistics of running the team. Whereas, you know, obviously Sam Schmidt, who's very good at doing that, can now run the team and maybe let Tagliani focus more on his results. So,
yeah, indeed. I think this is obviously a big win for Sam Schmidt. I think it's also a very good thing for the Fast operation as well. Tagliani is, they've already got good talent there with Rob Edwards as the chief engineer, things of that nature. They've got good talent on that team. Now they're bringing in pretty much a venerable owner to run the operation with Sam Schmidt. Right now, you know, in Indy Lights, Sam Schmidt is the class act of Indy Lights. If you want to win Indy Lights, you go drive for Sam Schmidt.
Last Pippa man.
Indeed.
So. Ask
J.K. Vernay. So.
Very good team. Well,
anyway.
Well, let's move from one team that, you know, may see some success because of the new ownership to a team that had some rather new ownership and has already fallen through the cracks. We reported last week at the end of the show that Tony Kanaan had been dropped from the DeFerrin lineup, a.k.a. just him. And it got much worse later in the week. We thought, you know, wow, this is terrible. This is a depressing thing for TK. It seemed as though he had a ride set, ready to go, had some sponsorship with a little bit of money with the Brazilian beer company, I believe they were. And then it all just seemed to come apart, and not just for TK, but then a couple days later, it just came apart for the whole entire team. And then we're hearing about Deferrin Dragon shutting down the whole entire operation. I mean, the team has ceased to exist, and there were some pretty big names within the team. I mean, you know, not you know, class names, but I mean, when you got a guy named Penske folding up shop, along with Gilles Deferrin, and this is just it. I mean, I don't know if this is just really bad luck for Gilles Deferrin, or if this is a pattern in his business model. I'll opt for the first because I like the guy, but he's in Honda F1. They pull out. He's in the ALMS program with Deferrin Motorsports with the HPD Acura LMP1. That folds up and shuts down in hopes of IndyCar. And now he's went to Lusco Dragon and formed the Deferrin Dragon Motorsport operation. And now that's shut down. I mean, what is the deal with this guy? I mean, now I know that they said – I know that he wasn't quite close to completely knocking off 2012. And there's a lot of thought that maybe because he's not running a full season this year, he decided to close the doors and save that money for 2012 and try again maybe. But, I mean, this is just a terrible track record for him and really a depressing story that I think – I don't think it set the whole entire series back, but I think it was definitely a step back when all the bad news started to come out about Deferrin Dragon.
Well, you've already got a lot of people – moaning and whining about the fact that guys like PT and Dan Weldon and they'll throw in Buddy Rice and, you know, a long list of other guys who should be driving an open wheel aren't. And now you've got TK to throw into the mix. Mm-hmm. And clearly right now with TK on the market, suddenly your hierarchy of which is the best driver that's available has altered dramatically. And some people even suggested that's why, some more moves hadn't been made on the driver market that people were thinking TK was going to become available. Whatever the case may be, it is a little concerning. You know, I can't remember if we talked about this on the podcast last week or not, but Deferrin is one of these guys who, quote, wants to do IndyCar right. He doesn't want to come in and do a shoestring budget operation, go race to race, those sorts of things. He wants to have the funding all set up and in place, wants to pay a driver and get a good driver who will do the best possible job for the team. With those things in mind, TK had something on the order of $1.5 million, somewhere in that range, according to Kurt Cavan, of sponsorship that he was going to bring to the operation. Now, part of that would have been his salary. But that said, TK was doing his part to bring sponsorship to the team. But the guy who, you know, the operation that wants to do it right wasn't able to bring anything to bear on that. And then you have to wonder a guy like Davey Hamilton, who had already announced that he was running Indy with Deferrin Dragon. So there's a bit of a mess going on there. It's hopeful that new investors can be found to buy into the team and keep it afloat. But at this point, it's pretty clear that Tony Kanaan's not going to be there, because if they are going to run next year, it's going to be with somebody who has money. Much more money than what TK could bring, and who doesn't want any salary.
Well, it was a sad story to hear, and definitely something that I could have done without. But it is what it is. It's a business. I mean, at the end of the day, IndyCar is a business. The motorsport industry is a business. And if you don't have the money, and, you know, unfortunately, really, to be honest, I don't care how good you are. If you don't have that money, you're just not going to, you're not going to make it.
Yeah.
So any other points to be brought on about Deferrin?
Just the question now stands, who gets their team money? It would seem, by most reports, the difference between a fully funded team program and a non-team program that runs all the races is somewhere on the order of about $400,000. That's a good chunk of money. I mean, when you're talking about $400,000, that could pay for, you know, a good chunk of your engine lease for the year. So, indeed, it's something that is interesting. Mm-hmm. Now, the IndyCar series has not announced who would get their team money, because they are one of the top 22 teams. The two teams that were on the outside looking in was one car from Coyne and one car from Conquest. Dale Coyne's car, his second car, was 23rd. Conquest's second car was 24th. So there's a possibility that they'll just roll it down to the next available car. The other option would be them assigning it to, say, a particular driver. Maybe they decide, well, Tony Kanaan was, you know, in the top 22 as a driver, so therefore he takes the team money. Who knows what's going to happen with that? I think the thing that they're being very hesitant about is they don't want to right away give the money to Coyne, who still is making a lot of noise about running Milka on the ovals. Yeah, a little concerning. I think that they're probably more interested in finding out what driver those teams are interested in running. Mm-hmm. And if it's a driver that they're interested in having, maybe they'll make a rule that allows it to happen. I don't know what's going to happen there. Maybe I'm just being cynical, but I think with any threat of Milka descending back into the league, they have to make rules up to make sure it doesn't happen.
Nice. That's sad, really. Yes. And yes, rules do need to be made to stop that from happening.
Yes.
Because it is an atrocity.
Yanker license. Don't beat around the bush and say, oh, well, maybe you can run the ovals and we'll just take your team money away so you'll be you'll be forced to get a better driver. Don't do that crap. Just take away the license.
It's all easy.
Well, she has no right to be driving in this series. I mean, you and I sat at Kansas when we went to see that ill-fated hurricane race a couple years ago, and the comedy and the thing that we were watching and laughing and enjoying the most was watching how quickly Milka just flew back through the pack.
She did. She fell like a stone. Anyway. Enough. Before you become too upset, let's move on to another topic, because I know where this is going. But today, anyways, there's big snafu thing over at Texas Motor Speedway. Media Day, and Danica Patrick was there, even though she's more of a NASCAR driver than an IndyCar driver. But who cares? Because we can both play that side of the field. okay, not inappropriate like your chuckle would lend one to believe. However, we did get some details today with regards to Texas and really the details of the race. And what we saw was that race one, of course, qualifications would be normal, as we always see. And the interesting thing was that race number two would be a blind draw.
Oh, jeez. Yeah. When we saw blind...
That Milka doesn't make the series now.
Yeah, that's what Jeff Iannucci tweeted almost immediately after it was announced. He said, Milka has a chance to be on pole.
Nice. But there were some other things, though, because they also said that there would be standby engines.
Yeah, and standby chassis.
Oh.
So if you wreck your car in the first race, you can get in a different car.
AKA Conquest, AKA Coyne, AKA all the lower budget teams.
Yeah, and AKA anybody who's trying to win the first race, you know, who knows what's going to happen with this. But it's kind of a cool idea, and I think it's part of the reason that they're not doing anything in the second race that's based on merit, per se, as far as where you start. They don't qualify for the second race, so there's no reason to force you to run the car you qualified.
Okay.
Now, one of the questions that I would ask is... let's be careful how this is exactly done, because you don't want them to be able to run race one and say, ooh, there's a suspension piece that's kind of bent a little bit on the car. So we really need to get into the second car and then get out there with a fresh car that's slightly differently and ready for the second race.
Nice. tactics. Team tactics.
Pinsky tactics.
Ah, nice. Yes. Any of the Red Army tactics.
But, so. You know, I like how they were talking about it. Randy Bernard was basically saying we're reviving an open wheel tradition and bringing back, you know, these double header events. And I'm excited to see it. I really can't wait for Texas. They do it right there.
They do IndyCar right.
Yeah.
Take note, Jill.
Yeah. Indeed.
Yeah, but I'm excited too. I can't wait to see it. I think it's going to be a great spectacle. Not only in the sense of, I don't think the results will be so much as manufactured, because obviously the cream always rises to the top in these races, but I think it's just going to be a blast to actually watch the racing, especially in that second race. Because if you get a guy like, let's just say, like, you know, hell, I don't know. Say you got somebody like Paul Tracy who's in a conquest. We'll just say, for example. And, you know, he starts on pole. Obviously, that car is not built for ovals. And, you know, it'll be – but at the same time, he's a good enough talent to where he can hold his own. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see how that happens. And and to be honest, we'll give some excellent opportunities, I think, for some young drivers to maybe shine at the front of the field who may not normally get that kind of opportunity because their equipment is bogus. So
– Yeah.
Well, there's some news today about my favorite road course, probably my favorite road course here in the United States. I'm not going to make any bone about it. I absolutely love this place. I went there last year with you for the first time and was you know, and the track was gracious enough to give us our media stuff and all that. And just to be at that track at that kind of a caliber and watch the ALMS race and everything and the Indy cars. I mean, the weekend was probably one of the best racing weekends I've ever been to. And that's Mid-Ohio. And it now seems as though that a Green Savory has purchased said racetrack.
Yeah. Let's put it in perspective. Mr. Green and Mr. Savory were the former part owners of Andretti Green Racing.
Yes.
They split off from Andretti Green and took the races that Andretti Green was promoting as their portion of the St. Pete and Toronto, is it?
I think.
They took those as their part of the business. Michael Andretti took the race shop as his part of the business. I imagine there's some money that changed hands as well. But those guys have added Mid-Ohio to their quiver of tracks.
Nice.
Watch out, ISC.
Yes. Jeez, these guys are regular road course. You know, they've got – because if you look at it, if you could take St. Pete, Mid-Ohio, and Toronto, those are probably the three best road course races or road/street course races on the schedule, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, St. Pete is man, that's a fantastic event.
Mm-hmm.
It's gonna be fun to watch, you know, Brazil in their second year, and I think that they are fast approaching what I think is the best street course event that we have, and that's St. Pete. Brazil may end up being on that same tier, but we have to see how it runs the second year and see if the pavement is better than it was the first time around and all of that. But
yeah.
Throwing in, you know, Mid-Ohio is an excellent road course, beautiful road course.
Oh, yeah, it's awesome.
While the facility may be a tad bit dated at parts, a little bit rumpled around the edges, it is still a great place to see a race.
Oh, it's fantastic. I mean, the whole weekend we had, do we have Speed World Challenge there?
Yeah, Speed World Challenge, ALMS, you know, the
Firestone Indy Lights,
of course, just everything going on. Yeah, they did the event right. So,
and that's what I'm saying. If you want to go see a road course race or a road street course race, I fully would put my hat in the ring for Mid-Ohio of all of them, because now, granted, maybe Edmonton may have a better race with a new layout and everything, but I think that. Overall, I think Mid-Ohio for natural terrain road courses, as you will, is probably the best on the schedule. Now, Barber was pretty good. I'll give it that. That was a pretty good race. But I really like Mid-Ohio, and I really like the facility. I like from a fan's perspective, I like what you get for your money. because, you know, I mean, you don't pay much for a ticket and you get all this racing all weekend. I mean, there's never not a car on track. And it was just really a phenomenal weekend. You walk about the paddock and you can just walk right into, you know, teams' paddock areas. I remember distinctly, I remember walking into the Ricci Ferrari paddock and everything. And I mean, it was just phenomenal to see how everything was laid out, see him working on the cars and everything. I mean, for my money, in terms of road courses at the moment, Mid-Ohio is probably the best you're going to get. So, but again, a lot of road courses really surging to the top, as well as a couple old names with some new faces that are looking, you know, maybe really up the game. But at this moment, if I had to pick one road course race to go to, Mid-Ohio would be the one.
Yeah, I mean, I can't really say that I'd be all that excited about going to the Land of Pinks to see a race. I might be interested to be in that region, but I don't. There's nothing terribly exciting about that track to me.
What's that?
To Infineon.
Oh yeah. I don't care for that track at all.
No. Armco Glen, I'm actually, you know, I know it has heritage and history in IndyCar and everything, but I really don't care for the place because it is Armco Glen.
Yeah.
You've got Armco surrounding that place. It's Robert Kubica's nightmare.
It is now.
Yeah. So I just, Barber is interesting, but it's tiny. Compared to what kind of tracks would really suit these cars better. There aren't any good passing zones, and it is kind of a short layout. So Mid-Ohio is probably as good as it gets for the Indy road courses currently. And maybe one day we'll get back up to Road America and get a chance to see that. Maybe one day we'll get over to Road Atlanta, get a chance to see that and compare. But for the time being, I would say Mid-Ohio is the best road course that we have.
Yeah. Well, interesting news tonight with the – or not so much tonight, but over the last week with Tony George now seems he's back on board with the Holman and company. For Indianapolis Motor Speedway. You care to speak to that?
Yeah, that's kind of interesting. We cut that from the show last week because it just happened. And honestly, there hadn't been a whole lot of blowback on it by the time we hit the show last week, and we had other things to cover. Well, this week it just blew up because Robin Miller wrote an article and dropped all the bombs he could about basically saying, well, if Tony decides he's going to meddle with the IndyCar series, Randy Bernard's going to be out the door.
What?
Yeah, well, we'll see. Tony is now back on the board of directors, Holman & Company, which is the parent company to the IMS Corporation and the Indy Racing League or IndyCar series. So he now is in a position where he could, with a little bit of finagling, vote himself back onto the IMS board. And then with a little bit of finagling, he might be able to convince the people on the IMS board to push him further down the line and get him back into a position of power with IndyCar. Those are obviously eventualities that we can only theorize about. Mm-hmm. Nothing's been officially said as to what the direction is going to be. However, Robin Miller really made some points that basically, you know, not only is Tony George now back on the Holman and Company board of directors, he brought three people with him.
Mm-hmm.
And those three people supposedly, according to Robin Miller, and I don't know if I believe this, I think this may be more Robin Miller speaking out of fear than knowledge,
mm-hmm.
but they're shills for Tony George. So not only is he on the board, he brought three votes along mm-hmm. with it, so he could basically do whatever he wants. If that's the case, then who knows what's going to happen. It's been fairly well known that Tony has said some critical things about Randy Bernard, about the direction the IndyCar series was taking. So
mm-hmm.
who knows where it goes from here, but I will tell you one thing. The IndyCar series has done more to grow in the last year than it did in the last 15 under Tony George.
I agree. I agree 100%. I think the very presence of Mr. Bernard, I mean, and the energy he's brought has just leaps and bounds over anything that Tony George has done. And I think if somehow he finagled his way, as you put it, back into any kind of a position of power, I think that alone is one to two, if not three steps back for IndyCar. Because part of, at least in my opinion, part of the appeal to the new IndyCar, if you will, granted I know, you know, maybe new advertising and new ownership, but I just think the way that Randy Bernard is approaching it and the way he's pushing it and the visions that he has for it as well, I think are better than, you know, I think they're better than what we've seen before. And I would be truly upset if we got Randy Bernard into any kind of, you know, potential position of power. That would be just, bad. Yeah. Then maybe the doom and gloom folks can come out and service their head and not have it chopped off. But until that happens, I'll go ahead and ride on the Randy Bernard bandwagon a bit more. Because I think what he's done for the series has just been phenomenal. And I mean, it's not even so much in his decision making as it is just his presence. So very charismatic, yet still humble at the same time. And I think that's been fantastic for the series. And I think it's really kind of got us to where we're going now.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. I remember when Tony George resigned his commission with the IMS board, resigned his position as CEO of IndyCar, and you know all of those things. When he just stepped out completely, he sent out, you know, a communique, kind of like a blog post on Vision's website, and with his departure, his question back to the board, quote, "My question for the board has been not one of who is going to manage the company, you know, now that I'm gone, but rather who is going to lead it. There is a distinction." Okay, let me put it to you bluntly, Tony. It's fairly clear that Randy Bernard has led the IndyCar series.
Yeah.
And there is a clear distinction between his leadership and yours.
Yours, which sucked.
Well, yeah. Don't mess with a good thing right now, Tony. Please.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There is a very good thing happening with IndyCar right now. You may not like that it goes against some of the traditions that have brought IndyCar to where it is, but let's be blunt, the IndyCar series is going to die unless new life is brought into it.
Mm-hmm.
I would say it's much better to keep the thing going than to let it die because we wanted to make sure that, you know,
we had a full month in May.
Yeah.
Or something of that nature. Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah. Well, let's just talk briefly about some Mazda Road to Indy stuff, if we could. And we got a few things, because usually this is something that Doug does, but Doug is out in San Francisco. He's doing the gaming conference, gaming convention there, as it is part of his job. So we'll let him go. But we did have one thing that jumped out first off, and that was that J.K. Vernay is not sounding overly optimistic about his chances in IndyCar. It looks as though he's just not going to get it, and a lot of rumor now has him heading back to Europe for the Le Mans series, which I do believe he's even been testing a car. I thought he even tested for an Orica. But I know that an Orica Peugeot, I'm not 100% certain on that, but I'm almost certain. But it looks as though he's not going to make it. And one of the things that's brought to the forefront of this is, okay, there's two questions which you posed on our notes here is, what does that say about the Indy Lights series? And more importantly, what does that say about JK's marketability amongst these teams? And if I could just insert my quick answer, and that is, I think that it shouldn't really say much about Lights as a series, in the sense that I think that while he was a phenomenal talent in Lights and potentially could be a phenomenal talent in IndyCar, I think the overall thing that hurts him is his marketability. Because when I hear JK, when you put me in with, you put Vernet, Pippa Mann, Martin Plowman, James Hinchcliffe, I mean, you put all these indie lights standouts kind of into a circle, okay?
Hildebrand.
Yeah, Hildebrand even. Yeah, Hildebrand. You put these names into a circle and you look at it, okay? You look, Pippa Mann, obviously, female driver, not to the caliber that we're talking like Danica Patrick, female driver. I'm talking about she's a female driver who's good. She's, you know, she has a chance to do good things in IndyCar. That's obvious, hence why she's out testing with Conquest. Then you take, for example, Plowman. You know, he's a good guy. He has a good story. You can market him. As well as, who's the other guy? Kimball. You can market Kimball. He's got a good story.
Yeah.
And then you look at Hinchcliffe. I mean, the guy is a walking PR dream. The guy is everything you want in a driver. He's funny. He's got good sense of humor. He's phenomenal talent behind the wheel, and yet he's humble in the sense that he, while he's good, he's not out there tooting his own trumpet saying, I'm awesome. Yeah. And then you look at Vernet, and what do you have to say about Vernet? Okay, he comes from Europe, and that's really it. He doesn't have a personality, in my opinion, as a team owner, that I want to go out and get him on my team.
Yeah, the only thing that really stands out is he comes with a fairly sizable bonus. Whatever team signs him gets the additional bonus money for him winning Indy Lights.
Mm-hmm.
What is that, like 1.75 million total, something of that nature?
Something in the ballpark, yeah.
It's a pretty good chunk of change. Now, you know, obviously it's not enough for you to just take that to a team and they run you. It takes a little bit more than that, as Tony Kanaan will vouch. But that said, I think what's happening with Vernet, and really what I wanted to get at, is his marketability is certainly suffering when it's compared to Hinchcliffe, Hildebrand, Kimball, Plowman, and Mann. Just mm-hmm. like you said, when you compare his marketability to those people, you're going to get those guys are going to get into rides before J.K. Vernet.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's unfortunate. But, hey, you know, even Sam Schmidt isn't, you know, hiring him for one-offs or anything in Indy Lights. And he won the title for him.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
He's a phenomenal talent. But if you look at it, the people we mentioned can compete with him. Okay, so they're not the champion.
Yeah.
But they can compete at his level.
Well, and
they have better marketability. So I'm not throwing JK out saying, oh, well, we're going to bring in a bunch of PR dreams to run the series. No, these guys and gal are good drivers, and they have the talent to run with Vernet, and they have the marketability. So I think that makes them a more complete package.
Yeah, I mean, you go through the list of drivers that are in lights or that were in lights last year that are trying to get into IndyCar this year, and the ones that really come to mind that you want to have seats for this year, really, I'd much rather see Hinchcliffe get a seat before I see J.K. Vernet.
Me as well. I really hope he lands that Newman Haas deal.
Yeah, I mean, Charlie Kimball getting a seat, I'm surprised by it. I really am. But he's got a story that's marketable, and he was able to bring a major sponsor because of that. It's not because of, you know, it's not because of Chip Ganassi that Charlie Kimball's going to be driving next year. It's the fact that Charlie has this major sponsor that he brought to Chip Ganassi.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
So... It's kind of sad, though. That's the one thing I also wanted to point out. It's kind of sad because they've set up these bonuses, these scholarships, if you will, for each tier of the Road to Indy. Mm-hmm. And the scholarship at the top tier of the Road to Indy may not get a seat for the Indy Lights champion.
Yeah. Something we'd have to definitely... tag Doug with
yeah
on we'll, that. But
we'll do more next week on that one.
Yeah, Well, a couple other Mazda Road to Indy, not Firestone Indy Lights, but rather Mazda Road to Indy things that I want to just briefly mention. Please swing by openpaddock.net this week. Doug will have, once he returns from San Francisco, he will have a full Mazda Road to Indy wrap-up. But he did forward me a couple nice little releases here. Dynamite Network, network who's got offices in places like Toronto, Hollywood, Detroit, Chicago, with video marketing and whatnot. A lot of technological, you know, genius, if you will, has partnered with Jensen Motorsport. Also, there's just a lot of interesting things coming on with this Jensen Motorsport and all these different deals. Also bring in Alliance Films and Jensen Motorsport are going to, they're going to go ahead and do something with a movie release in the neighborhood of something called Limitless. It's got some actors in it. It's a movie. I don't really know much more than that. I'm sorry. Again, Doug will have all of this wrapped up for sure this week. And then also, JDC Motorsport has signed a gentleman by the name of... I'm really sorry about this. I don't know the names as well as I should, but... Piedrahita as part of the 2011 USF 2000 National Championship. So another great talent brought into the fray, if you will. So he's a Colombian teenager, actually. So he ran limited time in Star Mazda last year, apparently, according to the release, and will now be full up in the USF 2000. So, but again, our Mazda Road to Indy guru, Doug, will have all of this in his weekly column in the Mazda Road to Indy weekly wrap-up. So please be sure you stop by the site and see that, as it will have everything that I just mentioned in much better detail, and he'll actually be able to explain it. But again, he's out hanging out with video game people. Which, speaking of which, as we segue kind of into the rally section here, Doug had somewhat of a, dare I say, Ken Block-esque weekend.
Oh, you're kidding me. What did Doug do?
Oh, I don't know. Hard telling with all the texts and calls coming in from him. But, all right, so Doug went to the 100 Acre Wood Rally down in Salem, event that we always usually, well, I always frequent since I've been in the area. Doug frequents, and then obviously you did last year as well. I didn't go, you didn't go, Doug was the only one. And then after the 100 Acre Wood Rally, he drove from Salem, which you know how tired we were last year after the rally, after the podium. He drove straight through back to Kansas City to get on a plane to fly to San Francisco for the game conference. So, dare I say, very Kim Block-esque moves.
And Travis Pastrana-esque moves as well, except nothing of Doug's was wrecked.
Yeah, and you'll be surprised at how fueled up a man can be when he's not illegally cut off in the hot dog line.
Nice.
Because this weekend we did have the 100 Acre Wood Rally for the Rally America Championship, or Rally Car. Governing body, and we had a huge surprise, and that was Travis Pastrana decided to enter the rally, and it's real funny because the Thursday before the rally, he was out doing NASCAR racing in the K&N championship or something of that nature for young stock car drivers, and he had an accident. He ran well the whole day and could have finished within the top 10 easily and crashed twice within, like, I think, like the last 25 laps. Really, he had some accidents. But then he got on a plane, came out, last second entry into the 100 Acre Wood Rally. Name wasn't even on the original start line. But then again, when a guy like Travis Pastrana comes to your event, you don't tell him no.
Indeed. Mr. Pastrana, how can we help you?
Yeah, what can we do for you? Manipulate the results, perhaps?
Yeah, no. he entered in the Subaru STI that Colin McRae ran in X Games.
Yes, it was actually – not only was it an entry that brought him back for one off this year, but it was actually really kind of, if you want to get into it, an emotional re-entry into the rally, because he did drive the last car, the last STI that Colin McRae drove in X Games, which he rolled over and still put up, I think, a silver medal after he rolled the thing. I mean, it was the 07 open class Subaru Impreza STI. It was not in its no fear gold livery as it was when Mr. McRae drove it. However, it was pure white for Travis Pastrana. And yeah, let's talk about how he wrecked on the first proper stage.
Well, the first proper stage. Stage one, though, was the super special at Potosi last year, which he biffed it into the side of the side of the road and broke the suspension. Mm-hmm. So it was good that he got through that one.
Yes, that's a positive step. But in the, I think it was about half mile into the first proper stage, he did actually hit. He went to take, if I remember his transcript right, a left four. It was he went to take it aggressively, and lost control of the Impreza, and threw it end over end. And my goodness, that car was just wrecked. Just wrecked.
Looks about like what it did the last time Colin drove it.
Nearly. It was a disaster. But the 100 Acre Wood Rally, probably one of the bigger events on the Rally America schedule, mainly because not only do you have the national championship cars, but you get a lot of people from both the East and West Regional Championship meeting up in Salem, which is about an hour or two outside of St. Louis. And they all show up to run. Unfortunately, our boys from Last Ditch did not show up as they committed to the Canadian Championship. But we did have some interesting stuff nonetheless. None of which had to do with the fact that Antoine Lestage destroyed the rally, as always. He won the rally rather convincingly. David Higgins was second, followed by Dave Mirras, so the two Subarus rounded out the podium. However, again, Antoine Lestage is dominating anything that is North American rally. Canadian mm-hmm. Championship, United States Championship, it doesn't matter. He's destroying it. And David Higgins made a valiant attempt at the end to catch up and was really flat out through the last few stages. However, I think that teamed with the fact that Lestage probably backed off just a bit to preserve the car and not go off, I think kind of helped with that closure of gap, not taking away anything, obviously, from Mr. Higgins, as he's a phenomenal driver. But, it's not uncharacteristic to see those kinds of gaps kind of close up a little bit. So Lestage dominates the 100 Acre Wood Rally with Mr. Higgins second, Dave Mirra all by himself in third, and Travis Hansen fourth in his super production STI. And actually, as leaving, he will now remain the championship leader overall.
In super production.
In a super production car, he's leading the overall championship.
Wow.
Yeah. We'll see. We'll see how long it lasts because...
Well, obviously, we had some retirements from the first rally, which have made it so that he could continue to stay in the front, even though he finished fourth in this one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, even though, a fourth place in super production, there's a lot of open class cars that run.
Yeah.
And, maybe they're not names that we're used to hearing. But, for him to go out and do that is an impressive run.
Yeah, so maybe he doesn't end up winning the overall championship title at the end of the season, but I think he's got a pretty good jump on the rest of Super Production.
Yeah, talk about dominating.
Yeah, indeed.
So, 100 Acre Wood Rally, I was so sorry I didn't get to go. Lots of people asking me if I was coming, and I was not. I tried, but being, with work being the way it was, it just wasn't a reality this weekend. I could have made it to Saturday had it not been for work. So, bummer for that. But, there's always next year. Moving on to the world stage, Jordan, Rally Jordan, one of the really cool rallies on the WRC calendar, introducing some fresh challenges for competitors this year. So, and that comes in the event of some new additions to some twisty stages, as well as some awesome Rally HQ prep. So a lot of big convention centers are now going to actually run as WRC headquarters or Rally headquarters. So, and it's going to look over the beautiful Dead Sea and some of the Palestinian hills that go with it. So it'll be interesting to see. That's a really funny comment. It'll be really interesting to see how the WRC cars avoid the protesters, as Mike just cleverly put. So as Jordan is one of the nations undergoing not so much a regime change, but some certain definitely some uncertain times for them, and it'll be interesting to see. So perhaps instead of Sebastian Loeb being mad because somebody perhaps moons him, he'll have to worry about the rock throwing, picket fenced, sign carrying protesters throughout the stage. So
yes, hopefully that whole region calms down a bit, but. Yes. I'm not thinking that this summer is going to be all that calm over there.
Yeah. Well, I shook the Magic 8 ball and they said not likely.
Well, okay. Good. So, good job. Right. Open Paddock has done our part.
Yes, we have. We're done here. Politics aside. But we do have a rally this weekend, and we have our only, well, some would say North American rally. I call it Central American rally, as there is no proper North American rally. But we do have Mexico. Rally Mexico is this weekend. This will be the first rally that we get to see the new Fiesta RS and the Citroen DS3 compete against each other on gravel, which is the surface that will actually make up a vast majority of the championship this year, more so than the tarmac that we've seen previously. And this is going to be the first good contest between the two, but now we have another thing in the mix that is another variable, if you will, in the mix, and that is the altitude. The altitude of Rally Mexico is just so much more than what we're used to seeing, I guess, with other championship rounds. And yeah, so it's going to be tough for the cars, for sure, but I think it's going to be a fantastic segue into what we could or could not see here in a few weeks. So when we start talking Portugals and Jordans and whatnot. So, but it's going to be a great one, and this is where we're going to really have to watch Sebastian Loeb, because we're now getting into the gravel stages where he dominates all the time. As well as, I mean, especially this event too. So, you know, there's a lot of different things in the cards this weekend, but it's looking like, you know, this will be, is Loeb going to be champion, or is he actually going to have to squabble and fight for it? Well, I guess we'll kind of figure out this weekend when we see the DS3's pace on gravel. So,
yeah, that definitely is the question for this rally, is seeing the overall pace of these cars on the gravel, which, like you said, comprises the bulk of the championship. So that question mark is out there. Supposedly Ford has been testing their engine in a special environment, in a special chamber that's meant to mimic the high altitude conditions they'll be in Mexico. So, hey, they've been doing their part. Do I think the Ford is going to have the Citroen on this? And that pretty much would, you know, basically determine who I say will win the event when we do our picks. And yes. I'm thinking Ford's going to have the upper hand this time around.
All right. Well, we have a couple wild cards in the mix here. We've obviously got the usual Citroen, Total, and Abu Dhabi Ford boys. We have, you know, the usual suspects. But this weekend for the Stobart, the M-Sport Stobart rally team, we have the likes of Henning Solberg and Mads Osberg nominated as point scorers. But the interesting thing is that the M-Sport Stobart boys will have four cars in competition this weekend. Which
wow.
That's kind of a lot. But they've got, obviously, the 2 point scores that I previously mentioned, as well as they're going to have the Matthew Wilson entry. As his deal was extended for a few more rounds, he will not be in the championship full time, but he will be in about 4 or 5 rounds of the championship. And Evgeny Novikov is coming back to the WRC. Where's this guy been? Said he'd actually retired from this. He actually retired or whatnot, retreated back to do some more regional championships, and is now coming back in a he's got pretty big sponsorship and will be driving in an M-Sport Stobart this weekend. And a lot of people are thinking that he may or may not be able to have the ability to pull off what we call the Mads Osberg, where he can directly influence a rally like that. I'm going to say no because he's not tested the Fiesta and doesn't. And the first time he's actually going to drive it is in Shakedown. So it's not like he's super familiar with the car, but we'll see what happens in the long run. But I don't think he'll be a threat for the rally. But good to see Evgeny, obviously, back in a World Rally car. He was the youngest driver ever to win a stage.
Jeez. So. And then he has the added benefit of having all the guys on Total Rally very high on him.
So. Yes. Yes, Total Rally loves Evgeny Novikov. I don't rate him as high as they do, but I do say he is a good talent. So
well, we will say it wasn't universal on Total Rally. Not everybody was full up on him, but you know,
We'll see. So this Rally Mexico has 22 stages. We're looking at about 364 kilometers. So it's going to be a very good rally, very grueling rally. But now it's time for the Open Paddock Fantasy, as I will dub it, the Fantasy WRC picks. And right now, Mike, okay, let's put all bygones aside from the Kimi Raikkonen incident from last year. We're getting our tail kicked by a lady.
Well, that's why I've got to pick Kimi Raikkonen this weekend.
Oh, Jesus. And that is why you're going to further fuel our demise.
No.
All right. So Christy has the championship lead right now because she successfully picked Mikko Hirvonen to win. So she's got 25 points. I'm ahead of you because I picked Jari Matti, and he finished third with 18 points. And you, sir, are currently third with Sebastien Ogier, who got you 16 championship points. And then Doug is the Petter Van Merkstein Jr., as he's not running a full schedule and will miss Rally Mexico as well because he didn't get me a pick. Unless, now, I will try to get a pick from him before tomorrow, so he may have a pick before it's all said and done, because I know he's hearing this and he's like, "You're not even giving me a chance to pick!" So, I understand. We will get a pick from you, good sir, before it's over. But championship honors means that Christy is first on the road, and I actually have her picks for the weekend. Okay. So she has sent me her picks because she knows she's the defending race champion here and current points leader. And her pick, her top three, okay, so the way we score is the only person who gets points really will be the first place driver. But in the case that we pick, all of us pick the same guy, then we pick a top three for tiebreaker. So her top pick for this weekend, her points, her nominated point score is Sebastian Loeb. She's picked Loeb to win the rally with Sebastien Ogier second and Jari Matti Latvala third. So.
Well, now that she swept the road of all the debris, how about you go ahead and get on out there on the stage and show them how it's done.
I will show them how it's done. I am going to jump out, and I'm going to say that this weekend for Rally Mexico, my pick, my winning rally pick, will be Petter Solberg.
Oh, my.
Yes.
Petter
Solberg will win the rally with because of his attitude. He's really high on it. And I will pick second place will be Sebastian Loeb. And third place will be Jari Matti Latvala.
See, that's where you're wrong. First place will be Jari Matti Latvala.
Oh, what?
Yes.
What?
I think Ford has it right, and I think Jari Matti is better on the gravel than Mikko right now.
Oh, so. Wow.
Then, second, I will give to Sebastian Loeb. Third, Mikko.
Wow. You threw your boy Petter to the wolves.
No, I'm not throwing Petter to the wolves. I'm just being realistic here, Sean, unlike you.
Oh, get out of here. You son of a...
You think he'll beat Loeb?
I think he can beat Loeb. So, I think Loeb will have a lot to dictate with the rally. I think that he'll obviously – I just don't see Petter Solberg losing this rally. I just don't. I have to pick him.
Here's my problem. I know that I'm not going to win this fantasy championship because I can't go out and pick the guy that's going to win.
Oh.
I can't pick Loeb race by race by race.
Well, yeah, everybody would do
that.
I
won't do it. He's going to win everything anyway. I won't pick him because I don't want to.
Nice. All right, so there you have it. For those of you keeping score at home, Christy has Sebastian Loeb winning the rally. I second on the road with Petter Solberg. Mike jumps out and picks Jari Matti Latvala, a man who he has nothing but hate and vitriol for.
Downhill.
And he picks him to win the rally. And and Doug, I assume, will pick Peter Van Merkstein to win the rally as he is shadowing his status.
I can pick Jari Matti. We're not at Portugal yet.
Nice. So there you have it. There's our rally section. So moving on. And we move on now to the Le Mans series. We have sports car news this week. Yay! And unfortunately, it's bad news because Aston Martin has revealed their AMR1 Le Mans Challenger. And wow, can we jump? I'm going to go ahead and jump out on a limb and say this is the ugliest car I have ever seen in Le Mans.
It looks a tad bit blocky. Let me jump out on a further limb. They put the number 007 on the side of that car, and it is not a car that any of the James Bond characters would have ever jumped in. I mean, seriously.
It's an explosive device to put it out of its misery.
Even in his late days, Roger Moore would have not driven this car.
No, this car is simply hideous. I'm sorry. I don't know what technical advantages you happen to think you're going to get, but you're going to get killed.
Yeah, the styling of the car is fairly interesting, though. Typically, you have a large fender for the front wheel. The bodywork scoops down and then goes back to a giant fender for the rear wheel, and in between is all kinds of flowing bodywork and such. But in this car, you basically have a pontoon that goes from the rear wheel to the front wheel. That's what it is.
Could we see Kimi falling off of this anytime in the near future?
You might see Kimi in a gorilla suit on this one.
It is. It looks simply like a box. There's nothing sexy about this car. I'm sorry. I'm sorry for the fans that like it, but I think it is honestly the ugliest car I've ever seen.
It's not all that impressive. Now, I can't say after last season I'm terribly surprised that Aston has their own chassis, because they basically made an enemy of Lola last year,
mm-hmm,
by basically claiming that it was their chassis. We made several tweaks to this, so we're calling it an Aston Martin. No, it's a Lola. Yeah, you hammered on a couple of bits to it and put it in a wind tunnel, but it's a Lola.
Yeah, right.
So anyway, it's the AMR1, O-N-E, not numeral. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, tie that into, go ahead and throw these specs at you. Try them on for size. It is an inline six-cylinder, direct-injected, turbocharged petrol engine, as opposed to the diesels, the turbo diesels that we see at the top. And it's a six-speed transmission. So.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. They're saying that the ACO rules this year are going to do a lot to level the competition between the petrol engines and the biodiesel and diesel hybrid stuff that's been going on. Yeah, sorry, I totally messed that one up. But anyway, it's supposedly going to be competitive with the diesels in that the ACO regs are going to normalize the engines as much as possible. I still can't see this thing winning all that much because it looks terrible.
Yeah. It is ugly. But that being said, Peugeot launched a hybrid version of their 908 as well. And I'll tell you what, that car is sexy with that paint job. Good Lord. White and black. It looks sick.
Yeah, I saw pictures of that as well. It's there's no new bodywork on it compared to the 908. It's just the power plant that changes the letters in its nomenclature. But yeah, the paint job on that looked pretty nice.
Oh, you know what I forgot to mention in the rally section? Doug. Doug is a damn genius. He found a county queen and took a picture of her.
Oh, you're kidding me.
So we have our county queen.
Nice.
There is an actual trophy to be passed about here. So I forgot to mention that. And thinking of our fantasy championship, there is actually a trophy girl who will now be presented to each weekend's winner. And it will also carry on into the IndyCar series. So... but let's get into things that are open wheel and not quite as cool as IndyCars. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
Well, at least what they're saying is not making me think that they're cool as IndyCar. But we're going to get into the F1 circus here, the traveling circus that is. And Bernie Ecclestone has come out and said that the Formula One management is going to take the hit for Bahrain, given, you know, obviously given the circumstances. And that is in the neighborhood of $100 million.
Oof. Yeah, here's the deal. Before, let's place a caveat on this.
Okay.
Bernie claims that FOM will take the hit for Bahrain.
Mm-hmm.
That's Bernie code speak for, we would take the hit if you don't reschedule it, FIA. And if you don't reschedule it, you're going to take the hit. I don't know. I don't know where this is going to go. You know, we had Todd on the show last week from FormulaOneBlog.com, and his assertion was, you know, Bernie let Bahrain cancel the Grand Prix so that Bahrain would be the one liable for the canceling of the race, not FOM, and therefore contractually Bahrain would still owe FOM and da 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 da. Well, according to what Bernie says, that's not the case. Now, what Bernie says and what we believe are two separate things. But the claim is, you know, from a couple of different sources, Pit Pass being one of them, that the total loss for the Bahrain cancellation, not only is it the $40 million, roughly $40 million for the sanctioning fee, but an additional $60 million from lost sponsorship revenue for the teams, because the teams write their contracts with their sponsors based on how many races they go to.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're skipping one of the 20 rounds, well, they said it could be as much as $11 million hit for Ferrari alone.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Okay, let's extrapolate that out to what their sponsorship, $222 million. That's pretty dang good if they get $222 million worth of sponsorship revenue.
Yeah.
Anyway, if that's the case, I think it's pretty clear if they can reschedule this race, they're going to try to, or at least Formula One management is going to try to.
Mm-hmm.
The question is, though, Formula One management and the FIA are two very separate entities right now. It used to be that Bernie and Max were fairly joined at the hip. Jeantot is his own man and making a lot of strides to show that he's his own man. And with this situation, would the FIA even be willing to entertain the idea of rescheduling Bahrain after it was canceled for political unrest?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure about that one. Because it doesn't look like it's going to calm down.
Yeah, and I think that Bernie's making a stink about it because he wants to try and force the FIA's hand into rescheduling it, or else FOM and the teams take a big hit. But in the end, Bernie, once again, you're the one that puts forth the slate of events.
Yeah.
This is your decision. This is FOM's decision as to what races they propose to the FIA to run. So, can't say that I'm shedding too many tears for Formula One right now over this one.
No.
Now, Speaking of the troll.
Yeah. Right.
On to other things that you couldn't actually fathom, but for some reason are gaining momentum.
Well, Bernie has been saying that he doubts the movable rear wing will work all that well. Several drivers have come out and said, yeah, you notice something from it, but it's not all that great. And several people have, you know, Bernie included, have made comments about how, well, this could be actually, you know, it can only be used in a very specific window on the track. It's going to be subject to massive steward oversight and all of this. It's going to create a mess because all these new rules that go in there and when you can use it and when you can't. And then what happens if you go into a corner and the wing is stuck in the non-deployed position? Just blow it completely and go into the tire wall.
Ow.
Well, I would say the first time that that happens, and it will, the first time that that happens, I think the rear wings are all locked into their normal position and everybody goes on and forgets about this really bad idea.
I agree. I agree with that. I could see that happening.
So Bernie has come out and said that he thinks that the rear wing is not going to work. He thinks all the gimmickry in Formula One is not all that, you know, what it's cracked up to be. And really, we should have gone with his medals to promote overtaking in F1. And he thinks that artificial rain is the answer to the problem.
Nice. And sadly enough, Pirelli comes out and says, we agree.
Now, Pirelli actually came out, you know, after Bernie made these statements, it came out in the media that Pirelli supposedly went to Bernie and said, hey, this worked out really good because they did that wet test in Abu Dhabi where Abu Dhabi has some sprinklers that they can hose the track with and do artificial wet conditions. And they said, this is great. You know, you have a clear sky and you have water on the track and it creates all this cool stuff. And we think it'd be great. Oh my goodness.
What? Bridgestone would have never said that.
Bridgestone doesn't need artificially wet tracks to hide the fact that their tires are going off so quickly.
Oh, good point. Good point.
I don't know, man. I can't remember who was making these statements, but there were some drivers today saying, we don't think we can make it in two stops on these tires. It may take three stops to get through a race with these tires. And if the tires are going off that badly, if they're degrading that badly, you got to know offline is going to be just piles of rubber.
Oh, yeah, it's going to be not epic.
Not just a dusting. I mean, just absolute piles. Yeah.
You'll be able to see it on the television since we're going over to this high def.
Yeah. Ooh, good point. Good point. The high def is going to be very bad for Pirelli, I think.
Look at how bad we fall off. Well, in other news, Japanese car maker Infiniti has decided that they're going to go ahead and sponsor a major portion of Red Bull. Now, some would say, well, what the hell does that have to do with anything? Well, if you know anything about the auto industry, you'll know that Nissan is a partner with Renault, and that Infiniti is actually a brand of Nissan, much as Acura is to Honda and whatnot. And it looks as though now Infiniti is going to be a major presence on the team as far as it goes not to actually label the engine an Infiniti engine. It will still be a Renault engine. But it's going to be definitely some good, a good move by Infiniti to try to push their products on the wings of Renault.
Yeah, and certainly this works out for Red Bull in that basically they're going to get their engines for free now, whereas before they were paying something like $7 million to Renault for the engines. This could be a nice little hand out to Red Bull to say thank you for winning the championship with our engine.
Yeah,
that was very nice of you. But whatever the case, it's good to see additional sponsorship on the side of the car. It's a little bit confusing because, well, it's a Renault engine and an Infiniti badge on the car.
Mm-hmm.
But I think everybody will be able to understand what's going on with it. And really, it's being done as a sponsorship for the car. Just like you said, the engine is not being badged an Infiniti engine. So, and too bad because the last time we had Infiniti engines running around, it was in the Pro Series.
Nice. Yeah.
The bad old days. Of
well, to close out
10 car races.
Nice. To close out the show here, we're going to get into a bit of McLaren, actually, and that is that both Lewis Hamilton and Jenson Button are now a bit upset about the pace of the McLaren Mercedes.
Yeah, this is an interesting one. They're making some statements that they're concerned that their car is not up to the pace of everybody else. And they're also making some statements about the they're waiting for the next spec of the car, and supposedly they launched their car too soon and didn't have the full spec of the car down and what have you. Mm-hmm. Whatever the case, they're really concerned, and we talked about this last week when they're saying, you know, everybody else is going out there and doing race distances, and we can't even, you know, do a handful of laps without bringing the car in and testing things and playing around with da 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 da. So, we shall see. This could be the old rope-a-dope, and next thing we know, McLaren deploys their movable under tray or something.
Nice.
And the car rockets into the distance.
One of the things they were talking about was the lack of downforce that the car has. So I don't know if that's something to do with the movable wing or whatnot, but it looks as though looking like something is amiss at McLaren, which is highly unusual for a team like that. So you're right, it could be a complete could be selling everybody a complete fake, but I guess we'll have to see what happens there in the future. But also, moving into close out the show, and an interesting point, Tony Stewart and Lewis Hamilton will be swapping cars. Yes, that's right. Tony Stewart, the driver of the Mobil 1 Chevrolet and America's NASCAR Championship, will be switching with Lewis Hamilton and will drive Lewis's 2010 McLaren racer, and Lewis Hamilton will drive Tony Stewart's Mobil 1 NASCAR as part of a sponsor gimmick for the at Watkins Glen for Mobil 1, who's also heavily involved with McLaren. And as you cleverly put, Tony will now teach Lewis Hamilton the ways of the Whopper.
He's already corrupted Juan Pablo, and next thing you know, Lewis is going to be gaining like 60 pounds.
Yeah,
sell what you love.
Estrada. but as I pointed out on Twitter this weekend, if we are to take last time this happened with Jeff Gordon and Juan Montoya in the DuPont Chevrolet and the the Williams Formula One car, this now resigns Lewis Hamilton's fate to being a fat, overweight NASCAR driver in the future.
Wow.
He will eventually, you can count on it, nearly. he will make his appearance in the NASCAR Sprint Cup Championship in a car in which Darrell Waltrip will then say it was because of NASCAR that Lewis Hamilton is a championship caliber driver.
Yeah, indeed. We have the open paddock Magic 8-Ball has been fully deployed. It has been shaken, and it says without hesitation, with only slight caveats, Lewis Hamilton will be driving in NASCAR.
It will all go downhill because the 2011 Challenger didn't have enough downforce, and then the swap and the political issues that is Formula One will drive Lewis Hamilton to the Sprint Cup Championship.
A couple of questions that do come up though is number one. Tony Stewart has been a fairly bulky guy of late, and there has been some rumors going about that he's lost quite a bit of weight.
Yes, for this.
For this is what people are saying. So you want to drive an F1 car? Well, you got to drop about 50 pounds.
All of your weight. No more Whoppers, Mr. Stewart. Hence why you're no longer sponsored by Burger King.
Yeah. Sell what you can't eat.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So interesting for sure to see how Lewis Hamilton fares in a cup car.
Yeah, I can hear how that drive-through order goes. I'll have a Whopper, cheese, no mayonnaise, no meat. Hold the bun.
Yeah. Just give me the lettuce. Let's just be realistic. Just give me the lettuce. So, all right. Well, that's it this week for the realm of motorsport and the debauchery that is the Open Paddock Podcast. Want to say thanks a lot to everybody for the download, as always. Thanks for reading the stuff. We've got a lot of great stuff up there right now, between the rally, the IndyCar, and whatnot, and now the show. And I'd like to say keep the constructive feedback coming. We have had some new iTunes reviews, which did not go in our favor, one of them anyways. So, and I want to make sure that the NASCAR crowd understands that, okay, fair enough, we were pretty harsh on them for a couple races, but as you've heard, we have not been overly harsh on them the last couple weeks. So please listen to the other stuff if you want to hear about IndyCar and Formula One. That is what we primarily talk about, but for whatever reason, we did have a wild hair in the old digit there, and it made us, it made me more specifically talk badly about NASCAR. but you know, that's not the norm here at the paddock. So continue to listen up. We'll have great things in the future coming out. Make sure you follow us on the Twitter. We have our 500 Twitter challenge going. As soon as we hit 500 Twitter followers, we will do a random drawing for 2011 Indy 500 garb, which will then be sent to a random drawing. So you will, if you're the 500th guy, you do not win. You will then ignite the, drawing, the random drawing, might I add, for the 2011 Indianapolis 500 gear. And let's be honest, who doesn't want that because of the centennial era and whatnot? Also, be sure to follow us over on Facebook, especially if you're an IndyCar fan. Randy Bernard likes us, so why don't you? unless you don't like Facebook, rather. Sure, you like IndyCar, but unless you don't like Facebook.
Don't like apple pie.
Yes, or Americans, or freedom. So,
communist.
Which we are an international program. However, heavily biased towards the good old US of A. But we do appreciate all of our fans, and we want to thank everybody so much for listening this week. And we will be back next week on our usual Tuesday time slot for the show with hopefully a third party of somebody. I do believe that now that Christy is out of her dental work, she'll be able to join us next week. So be sure to take a listen then. So, and stop by openpaddock.net. So say goodnight, Mike.
Good night. Thanks for joining us.
Good night, everybody. We'll see you next week. Thanks.